Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott, episode 32 for July 27th, 2007. Neener, neener, neener! Windows Weekly is brought to you by Audible.com. For your free audiobook, visit audible.com/Windows. Welcome to Windows Weekly. Leo Laporte here with Paul Thurrott, and it's our semi-monthly, annual, biannual, whenever we think of it, live version of the show today. So before we get to the phone calls, everybody, and we will do that soon, so if you're on TalkShoe, give us a ring. We're also streaming video of this, I am anyway, my end, through Ustream. We're going to start playing with that a little bit. Let's get to some of the big news stories of the week. Number one, quarterly earnings. Now, Apple had a very good quarter, a record quarter yesterday. Microsoft, as with all the companies, they all kind of do their quarterly reports. Their quarterly analyst calls at the same time. Microsoft today reported its earnings. What do they look like?
Their earnings were fantastic.
Well, there you go.
So thank you for coming, everybody. We'll
good
see
night,
you
everybody.
Week.
Another great quarter for Microsoft. What kind of earnings?
I don't believe that they actually set a record for their quarterly earnings, but they did set a record for their yearly earnings. And they hit revenues of over $50 billion for the year for the first time, 15% gain. But as far as the quarter went, the profit was $3 billion on revenues of $13.37 billion.
That puts Apple's piddly whatever it was, $81 million or whatever.
Apple's so cute.
It really puts it in perspective. $3 billion? How much? $3 billion?
$3 billion in profit.
Profit?
On $13.37 billion in revenues.
Good Lord.
Everything, all the usual suspects were up. You know, Windows, Office, we're doing great. Non-core businesses, not so good. Online services lost $239 million. And the video game division, I believe it actually kind of made money, but it revenues actually fell by 10%. And, of course, they saw a massive slowdown in Xbox 360 sales in a quarter. And by the way, the other thing that's interesting about this is, speaking of the 360, of course, they took a $1 billion charge because of the Xbox 360. They took that in this quarter. So these results are after the $1 billion charge.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, it just shows you when you have $3 billion net that you can subsidize things like online. I mean, what's a loss of a couple of $100 million in online? Or even in Xbox, $1 billion in Xbox, if you get that kind of profit. So, in other words, even after taking $1 billion hit for the Xbox warranties, they still made $3 billion.
Yep,
unbelievable. Wall Street off quite a bit today. The Dow suffered its largest drop of the year.
Really?
But that's, I guess, not because of Microsoft. You can't blame Microsoft.
It has to be because of the iPhone.
it's Apple's fault. Blame Apple.
Well, actually, okay. I want to bring up something about the iPhone. And even if you don't like when I mention Apple things, I think you'll appreciate this.
I'm not one of those people who's saying don't mention Apple. Believe me.
I didn't mean you.
Oh, you meant them.
But they didn't sell as many as people thought. But what's interesting?
Wait a minute. That's not true.
Yes, it is.
It's not true.
Apple sold 270,000 in the 2 days. The analyst estimates were anywhere from 500,000 to 700,000.
But that was for the week. We're talking 30 hours. They sold 270,000.
Okay.
So we don't know. I mean, first of all, analysts were obviously crazed.
you think? I mean, but that's not really the point I wanted to make. Based on the number they sold and based on the number that were activated in that two-day period, that means that almost 50% spent an average of $585, according to Apple, walked out of the store, went home, plugged it into their computer, and then couldn't use it.
Not necessarily. Oh, Paul, now you're jumping to conclusions.
Actually, wait, it's worse than that, because during the conference call, the Apple CFO said that 270,000 figure actually included machines that weren't sold to customers. They were shipping en route to stores. So actually,
they're doing that Zune style accounting.
Yes, and a lot of people on the Mac side give me a little bit of flack for some reason when I report, you know, Microsoft sold a million Zunes. They say, well, you know, Microsoft doesn't really sell them. They put them in the channel. Well, the CFO of Apple yesterday during the conference call said the exact same thing about the iPhone. So,
so that was channel numbers, not out-the-door numbers. That's interesting.
Yes. Yeah. So,
in fact, I don't even know what that means when they say in 30 hours, 270,000 in the channel.
It's a screwy thing that they did, putting it on sale late on a Friday. It happened to be the second to last day of the financial quarter for two companies involved.
Oh, that's why they only reported the 30 hours.
Yeah, which really messes things up, you know. That whole thing was kind of a...
That's interesting. Wanted to point out that not everybody tried to activate them. I mean, I know many people who bought phones to give to people or bought second phone, blah, 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 blah. I mean, just because that many were sold doesn't mean that many people tried to activate it that day.
You're being generous, but I think that anyone who spent that kind of money on a phone, I can't imagine anyone sitting on it for any amount of time. I mean, they had an astronomical rate of...
they had real activation problems, I know. Yeah.
And I had the same problem, too. And it didn't take them a day. I mean, I think the way it worked was it was late at night when I tried to do it. And I believe when I woke up in the morning, they had sent me the stuff I needed via email. So, you know, it wasn't like waiting a day. But, man, there's nothing like spending $600 and then having nothing.
I know.
You can call 911. I mean, can you imagine all the 911 calls just from iPhone guys who are like, I just wanted to use my phone. There's nothing wrong. But could you just talk to me?
Please talk to me. I just want to use my phone. So essentially what you're saying is neener, neener, neener.
I'm just saying. I guess the point I'm trying to make is
let's be fair. You're saying let's be fair.
Yes. I report the way Microsoft reports sales because that's what they always do. That's the way they do it for Windows.
Apparently that's how a lot of people do it because that's how Apple just did it.
Yeah. And someone always has to point this out to me via email. Well, yeah, but they didn't really sell a million. You know, they probably only sold seven. The other 999,000 are in, warehouse somewhere. And actually with the Zune, that may be true. But, I just wanted to point out that Microsoft is not alone in this style of accounting.
Well, and I have to say, in fairness to Apple, that it's very likely that they did in fact sell all of those, since most of the stores were sold out.
Oh, I have no doubt of that at all. Yeah, absolutely. Within days, they were completely sold out. Right. And anything that was in a store was gone.
Right. So, absolutely. I mean, maybe they were in the channel long.
So if those things, as he put it, I believe he described it as en route to stores. If those things were en route and they arrived the next day or
they were gone.
Following Monday,
right.
I assure you they were sold that day, right. Absolutely.
However, I think that point well taken, that that is the common way of reporting sales because they can't be sure how many have gone through the cash register, so they tell you how many are in the channel.
Right. So that was about a 20-minute diversion from the actual topic, but...
Well, hey, a good day for Microsoft. By the way, I don't know if this will add to Microsoft's $3 billion net revenue, but you know the Dig just signed a deal with Microsoft to use this is the second big company. Facebook was the first to use this brand new Microsoft ad platform.
And also in the same week, Electronic Arts signed an agreement with Microsoft to put advertisements inside of video games, which I'm freaked out by. But you could sort of imagine a sporting game where maybe in the outfield of a baseball game they have an advertisement on the wall or something. That stuff will apparently be dynamic. It will be driven by Microsoft's massive technology, another company they purchased that does in-game advertising. So all of a sudden, they're making these little gains.
If you buy an ad in a game, I guess this is reasonable now that you can do this. These games are mostly played online. You can refresh those ads. They're not static. And this was the problem before. You buy an ad in Doom 3, it's not going to change 4 years from now when you play the game. But
the product's gone.
But these are updated ads.
Right. They're dynamic.
Interesting.
I remember they showed me technology like this for their version of Google Earth. You know, they have the Microsoft, I don't know what it's called, Live Earth
Live
Search.
Live Map or something, yeah.
And you could fly around in a city and they would actually throw up dynamic ads on billboards and things. And they were actually very natural looking, but it was always really kind of funny because you'd be zooming around through a city and you'd see an ad for Coke or something. And it was actually a dynamically generated ad. And they were done in very, not theatrically, but very creatively, certainly, you know, to look natural in the environment and so forth.
It's interesting that Microsoft, and by the way, their big competitor in this is Google. Yahoo hasn't even been able to succeed competing with Google on these online ads.
Right.
So it's interesting.
Right.
Is all of this an acquisition by Microsoft, or did they develop some of this in-house as well?
I believe that the EA stuff is all an acquisition. That was the massive acquisition they made last year. They did beat out Google for this, by the way. Google was one of the competitors for that.
Yeah,
and on the Dig one, Dig was previously using Google, and they switched to Microsoft. And I have to think that Microsoft is giving them some kind of a...
sweet deal?
A stipend or something.
Sort of an extra something in their pay packet this week.
Right.
Well, I would imagine
I would switch to Live.com if I could get paid monthly for it. You know,
maybe that's their solution for beating Google for search.
Yeah.
Just pay everybody.
Every time you select Live.com from the Internet Explorer browser, you get 30 cents.
Take $1 billion out of their $3 billion net.
Sure.
Just give everybody a buck.
Spread the wealth.
Why not? Here's a buck.
Well, so how much would it cost to reverse $239 million in losses?
A billion.
Not $3 billion, so.
No.
Yeah, yeah.
And, I think the $239 in losses isn't awful. I mean, that's R&D expense, essentially. I mean, that's building a live platform.
Well, that's been going on for a while. That's the problem. I mean, I don't know that their online business has ever generated income, except maybe in a quarter here or there. Very randomly.
When you say online business, you're talking about Windows Live, you're talking about the MSN, you're talking about MSN Search.
Sure. All that stuff, yeah.
None of that's making money.
Right.
Interesting. Bad news for, good news if you don't like DRM, bad news if you are trying to protect your music on the Zune or it's been cracked.
Yep. Bad news for my friend who works on this at Microsoft. Curiously, I've not heard from him in a few weeks. I wonder if this is why. But
I always thought it was pretty hard, frankly, to crack Microsoft's copy protection. You don't see cracks in WMA on the music stores. Well, now you do, but that's the first.
Now you do, yeah. It happens occasionally. The nice thing about their DRM is that it's renewable. And the thing I'm confused about, again, I haven't checked this in the last day or two, but this now, as we're speaking, happened a couple of weeks ago. And my understanding is it's still wide open. So if you were to go up and purchase a song from Zune Marketplace or one of the other Windows Media Base stores, you could use a utility called For Use 4M, and just it would just strip the DRM right off of it.
Interesting.
And granted, that's it's sort of a nice fair use thing to do, I guess, unless you're going to distribute it to others. But I guess it's also in violation of the DMCA or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. So there's always the issue, and I always get a little nervous because this happens to Apple pretty regularly, and what Apple will do is update iTunes to get around it, to change the copy protection. It always makes me a little bit nervous because you don't know what the consequence might be down the road should the Zune store be updated.
Well, this in some ways is a weakness of the way Microsoft did things, because their platform is spread out now with all their partners. It's easy for Apple just to update their client and say, from here on out, if you want to buy songs from our store, you need to be using this version.
Right.
On the Microsoft side, they've got Napster and Yahoo. They've got their own Zune thing. They've got all these device makers. I mean, getting an update to the system is a little more difficult when you have to take into account, this huge ecosystem of partners. And, it's an interesting example where Apple can move very quickly and Microsoft cannot.
Interesting. Huh. Well,
even though Microsoft in some ways has a more sophisticated DRM system, but
you're saying the problem is that you not only have to fix it on the Zune store, but Rhapsody and Napster and all these other stores that use it.
Yeah. And I think that's part of the reason they went with when they did the Zune thing. You can look at it and say, well, they're copying Apple, which of course they are. But part of what they're copying is, they didn't own the whole widget before, even though they made all the technology
Does it break the Place for Sure, too?
I believe so. I'm not actually sure. I tested it on a Zune Marketplace purchase just to see if it would work. And my understanding of this is that the Zune version of WMA is, the most recent revision of that technology. So I believe, let's see, yeah, I believe it does affect the other services.
Interesting.
Napster,
so they use the same technology across the board.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, interesting.
So, for DRM, yeah.
Yeah, so there is no advantage then to this Zune store. It's not because it isn't its own separate.
Right, although you could see them maybe going that route,
right,
if they haven't already yet.
So, you know, Microsoft's big earnings really make sense given what we've seen this quarter in PC sales. Mm-hmm. They've been up incredibly, although it's kind of sad because while sales are up, the margins are down. They're not making other companies.
Sure.
I don't know about Microsoft. Microsoft's all margin since they don't do hardware.
I mean, the PC market is so mature and it's such a commodity market. Sales, I would say probably about an average 12% up year over year for the quarter. Better than expected and so forth, but yeah, no doubt the PCs that are going out the door are those lower end, lower cost, you know, high turnaround type machines.
Companies make a buck when you buy.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I have to. I've lately come up with this theory. You tell me whether you think I'm off base here. You know, one of the reasons it's tempting to blame Microsoft for all the blue screens of death and the issues that PCs have, but I think really there's a larger reason, and it's because the marketplace customers have pushed prices down so low and margins so thin that frequently PC manufacturers, especially on the low cost PCs, cut corners and actually put components in that aren't very good.
Yeah, no doubt. And this is actually another example of that same problem that they have with the DRM stuff, which is, once again, we're talking about a market where they have all kinds of partners at every level of the way and all kinds of hardware partners who create all these little devices, and they create really bad software drivers and so forth. And for years now, it's been true that the number one cause of blue screens on Windows are poorly written device drivers.
Right.
So I don't think you're going to see a lot of blue screens coming off of a new PC typically. But, you know, you add an internal card of some sort, you plug something in. If the drivers aren't up to snuff, you could have some problems.
I think a lot of people blame I think Windows gets the blame, unfortunately. And I think a lot of times it's not. It's just crappy hardware.
Sure. But it also behooves Microsoft, as the creator of the platform, as the people that others will ultimately look to fix the problem, to actually do something about it, right? So in the 64-bit versions of Vista, they're requiring driver signing, for example, which hopefully will make, you know, for more sophisticated and more reliable drivers.
I don't just mean drivers. I mean, it's bad, you know, the bad capacitor problem. Now it's the bad flux problem. I think they're using junky parts in a lot of times, and there's nothing a driver or software can do. It's just going to crash or be flaky or unreliable. So you don't get, I get all the calls on the radio show and on the TV show for people who just have inexplicable intermittent failures on their hardware. And I think I think more and more, I'm just of the opinion that's just because you're buying a $600 PC, and that's as good as it's going to get.
Yuck. You're probably right.
When there's no margin on a PC.
Right.
I mean, not only does tech support go,
right,
but I think frankly,
quality goes
way downhill. Anyway, that's a thought. So it is good news that PC sales are up, but I don't know if it's good news if the companies aren't making more money.
Right. Actually, you know, when you think about PCs right now, some sort of really general advice would be look at a company like Dell. And the reason I say that is because they've had lots of problems. And, you know, they kind of booted out their CEO. They brought the founder back to run the company. He's turning to customers through their blog, and they're starting to pump out these things one after another. And this is a company that's really trying to do the right thing. And it sort of reminds me of when I think it was it Taco Bell or Jack in the Box had that problem with
the E. coli problem.
E. coli, right?
Yeah.
In the wake of that disaster, you'd have to think that restaurant was probably the safest place on earth to eat because, you know, I mean, you know, they were looking at that really carefully.
Yeah,
right?
But did you get in line to go there? Would you bring your kid there?
It was Jack in the Box, right? So I don't. Yes. We don't have Jack in the Box where I live, unfortunately.
Oh yeah, cop out.
Cop out.
Yeah, you. I don't think you'd line up. No, you say, "Hey, come on, son, let's go to Jack in the Box. They've got to be safe now."
Well, I certainly.
They certainly have licked that E. coli problems by now.
I hope they didn't lick it, but yes.
I would hope not. Oh yeah, yeah. Yes. Ooh.
Not that what Dell went through was similar to E. coli in any way.
No, nobody died because Dell didn't make a good computer.
I hope not.
All right. So, and by the way, I have should say, I think Dell has solved their problems, and they make very good hardware, right?
Oh, I agree. Yeah. I really like what they're doing.
Yeah. I love these. Yeah. I'm really sad because I bought a M1210 notebook, and then they shortly came after, came out with the 1310.
Oh, I did the same thing. I bought the desktop, and now the new desktops are gorgeous looking.
Yeah, they're really making pretty computers all of a sudden. Not that pretty is the most important thing, but still.
Well.
Hey, we're going to get one more story in here. We're also going to take your calls in just a little bit. I want to encourage everybody listening on TalkShoe to line up, sign up, and re-enlist today because our country needs your questions. If or something.
Well, that's quite a responsibility.
Yes. Yeah. If you don't call us, the terrorists win. So
The dog dies.
I'm not sure exactly how to do it, but I'm sure you do if you are on TalkShoe. And if you're not on TalkShoe, go to TalkShoe.com. I know there's about 40 people watching on Ustream as well, and we'd love to hear from you. TalkShoe.com and sign into the show. And I think you can use Skype as well as a regular phone to call into the conference bridge, and we're going to get your calls on in just a second. Announcement from the guy at the Mozilla Foundation that they, and I'm kind of shocked by this, are thinking of phasing out Thunderbird.
Well, they're thinking about doing something with it. You know, they're, of course, responsible for the Firefox web browser, and they want to focus all of their energies on that because they feel like they have a chance
to. That's where they make money. That's why.
Yeah, to do something.
That's what
Now, Thunderbird, like Firefox, Thunderbird is based on the old Netscape technology. This is the email client that Netscape had come up with years and years ago as part of Constellation. It kind of went through the Mozilla suite there for a while, and they've pulled it out, and they're trying to do to email what they did to the web with Firefox. So Thunderbird is the latest version of their email application. And as I do, you know, as they come up with new versions, I looked at it earlier this year, and it's fine for what it is. It's certainly nicer than, say, Windows Mail or Outlook Express or anything like that. But I read this email call to action that Mitchell Baker, the CEO of Mozilla, wrote, and as I'm reading through her sort of treatise about this thing and what they, you know, she thinks some of the options are, it occurred to me that I don't really see what the problem is here. Just get rid of it.
Right.
I mean, I know that there are lots of people who would just completely disagree with that, but I really feel like we're hitting a point now where this kind of stuff is just moving on and that people are increasingly going to use these web-based solutions or access email through their phone using those web-based solutions and so forth. And that, you know, a dedicated email client that sits on one computer and you have to go there to access your email is sort of passe, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I don't say that like I'm some kind of industry seer. I mean, understand that I came to this very late.
But as is often the case with somebody who's a convert, you're passionate.
I see the light. I see the light.
Yeah. Hallelujah, brother.
Yeah. Yeah, but I want to be clear here. I am not on the leading edge. I blew it on this one. You know, I was using Outlook for various reasons, and it's a fine application. It really is.
Well, don't a lot of people in business still use Outlook?
They do, but you know, a lot of people in business also use Outlook Web Access,
really?
Which is essentially what I'm talking about. You
right.
know, which is or access their Outlook through a mobile phone, like Windows mobile.
No,
device.
I see that. You're right. I mean, I look at the salespeople at KFI, and they have Outlook, but they use the web version.
And why not?
You know,
it looks
they're mobile,
almost the same.
It looks exactly. Yeah.
Right. And they can use it from home. They can use it on a different computer. It's secure.
I think I'm like you. I came late to this because I'm an IMAP fanatic. And IMAP gives you many of the same benefits, but you have a desktop client, but you still have that kind of one mail cache that no matter where you look, you get the same messages. And so that's really what they're getting with web-based mail.
Right.
Yeah. Is it Gmail that you think transformed all that?
Well, Gmail is what transformed it for me. I mean, but Gmail in many ways too was late to the game. And actually, even if you want to talk about Gmail as a web 2.0 application, it's really not up there with, you know, what Yahoo and Microsoft have done. But they did some technical things which I think make Gmail a very unique email service. And that doesn't mean the others are obsolete. I mean, I'd say any of those or any of the many webmail solutions that are out there are just fine.
Right.
And certainly, if you want to, with most of them, without paying, you can access them, you know, from a POP client or whatever, you know, Thunderbird-type application if you want. But I just think that the process of going through, you know, the installation, the configuration, you know, the spam filter that you have to hone over time, all that stuff you have to do, You would have to do that every single time you got a computer.
I do. It's a pain.
And
in the butt.
For people like you and I, it's even worse because you know we install things all the time,
right.
And it's ridiculous. I mean, for me, it was a living hell moving email and calendar and contacts from computer to computer. It's ridiculous,
right? And you know,
anyway,
I think you're right. I think a lot of people now have multiple computers, or they're on the move. They're in sales. They're students. This just makes more sense.
I mean, for me, I have lots of computers. So I had a friend over yesterday. He was on my computer. I popped open my Mac, opened up Firefox. I was in my email instantly.
Right.
No problem. No configuration. No forethought. It's just there.
Does it look like with Windows Live Mail, Microsoft wants people to move to that even from Outlook?
Well, those are two different markets in some ways. I mean, Outlook has always been that, you know, business-oriented enterprise product. But you can see even on that end, I mean, if you look at Outlook Web Access, the web version, which I'm sure borrows some technology from the Hotmail guys, it looks very much like the client. So functionality is very consistent between the two. But, you know, the Anywhere Access stuff, which is so important, if you can go up and use, I know guys that, use Outlook, I'm sorry, Yahoo every day. I know guys that use Hotmail every day. I happen to use Gmail. You can actually live in these web applications. I mean, you can just stay there. It's wonderful. And then, of course, if you're worried about the stuff, you know, as we talked about a few weeks back or a few months back, I don't recall, Google is working on that Google Gears technology so that you'd be able to access the web version of Gmail offline, write emails, respond to emails, and then they'll send when you get back online, just like an application. So I think that's the final nail in the coffin of this stuff. We don't need these things anymore. You know, the browser is the application. So the one thing I think she got right is focusing on Firefox is very important because that's the platform.
Right.
Through which now I do most of my personal information management. Right. Actually, all of it.
Well, you look at companies like Qualcomm's dumped Eudora. I think you might be right. I think that the days of the static mail client, desktop mail client might absolutely be.
I remember when Eudora, they announced, whatever that was, 6 months ago or so, that they were going to move to the Thunderbird technology, and I just thought, you know, what a waste of time. Whatever. I mean, you're pushing aside one bit of technology no one uses for another one. Congratulations.
Well done.
All right, we're gonna take a year for that. You know, enjoy yourself. Have a good time.
We're gonna go to your calls in just a second. Once again, line up, queue up on TalkShoe, and we will answer your questions in the order they are in the queue. Before we do, though. Once again, I want to thank the folks at Audible for sponsoring this podcast and most of the TWIT podcasts. They've really been very generous. I asked Paul if he's got any blood and guts books to report for this week, but he's still you're still reading the Michael Crichton, are you? Or
No, I'm on Hitchhikers now. So,
oh, that's right.
I'm still going through that one.
All right.
Hitchhiker's Guide to
that
the
was a great. That was a great recommendation. A lot of people talking about that one, by the way, saying, oh, yeah, it's a great book, so forth.
It is really.
I would like to recommend a business book, since I know we have a lot of listeners who are interested in business. I have... And I guess it's gone. Thomas Friedman's The World is Flat. I got on Audible.com, and I noticed it's no longer available through Audible. And this is kind of the issue with Audible is this sometimes happens is the publisher, for whatever reason, decides to go elsewhere or to pull it off. I don't know. However, others of his books are on there, and all of them are good. I would recommend Alexis and the Olive Tree, which is have you read it?
No, but I'm going to because I actually, within the past week, read a review of it because I had read The World is Flat. And I went and looked at the other stuff that he had written, and that was the one I was looking at next.
He's talking, of course, about he starts talking about the Lexus plant, which is almost entirely automated. But it is another book about the global economy. I think more, frankly, entertaining than The World is Flat. It's when Thomas was getting his insights and really was kind of the beginning of this notion of globalization for him. He's a great guy. I've interviewed him, a really smart fella. And I love the book, The Lexus and the Olive Tree, available in an abridged form. You know, somebody asked me abridged versus unabridged. And very often I find, I hate to say this, I don't want to make blanket generalizations, but very often nonfiction books are a little longer than they have to be.
So what do they read, every other word?
The abridged, they cut them down. But I don't know how they cut them down, usually with the author's cooperation. But
sure.
I found that, and look, as somebody who's written quite a large number of nonfiction books, the publisher is always saying thicker.
Right.
Nonfiction sells better if it's thicker. And I find that a lot of nonfiction books, really, you get the idea in the first couple of chapters. So I don't mind reading abridged nonfiction. If I find it really useful, I might get the full copy of the full book on abridged. I never read abridged fiction. I mean, I believe an author is an artist, and if the author's created a work of fiction, you ought to read the whole thing in its entirety. But so I always do unabridged fiction. Unfortunately, Audible has a lot of that. But for nonfiction, especially in our busy lives, I think you usually get almost everything, if not everything, by reading the abridged version. So this is the 3-hour version. One credit, so you can get it right away as your free book from Audible by going to audible.com/windows. Somebody asked me to clarify, you do not have to subscribe to become an Audible. You just join Audible, you give them your credit card, and you get the free book. You can quit if you don't want to subscribe. You don't have to pay a monthly fee. The subscription saves you money. That's the point. If you're going to get more than one book a month, or even a book a month, you're going to want to subscribe just because it's a lot less expensive that way. Do you do the yearly subscription, Paul? Or?
No, I do monthly, but that's interesting. I hadn't even...
They have a yearly.
Okay. Yeah. I just sort of did it and left it and...
Well, yeah, I think it's a good deal. I'm really lucky. I've been a member for so long that I'm grandfathered into a plan that's not even there anymore.
Nice.
And it was such a good... I don't remember what it is, like 10 bucks a month for 2 books. Yeah, the publishers kind of went after them and said, you can't keep doing that. we got to make more money than that. So they don't offer that anymore, but they do a very... It's a much more affordable way to get these books. Although, if you know you only want to have one or two books, hey, you can get one for free just by going to audible.com/windows. Again, my recommendation, The Lexus and the Olive Tree, or any of Tom Friedman's books. He's very good. That one in particular, I really enjoyed. And then we do thank Audible for their support. audible.com/windows. You ready to take some calls, Mr. Paul Thurrott?
Absolutely.
You feeling good?
Let's not forget the software, though.
You want to do software? Some calls, and we'll do the software pick at the end.
That's fine.
How's that sound?
That's good.
I got a plan, dude.
I
got it all in my head here. You got a good software pick?
I hope so. I think
right.
I do.
All right. Now, if folks, if you're going to give a software pick and you can't do that, don't take balls.
I don't want... Right. Well, I would be impressed if someone did, but that would be...
Oh, it's a challenge now.
That would be good.
Let's go to our first call of the day, CompuVision. Welcome to Windows Weekly. Hi, CompuVision. What's your first name? Where are you calling from?
Steven, calling from Detroit, Michigan.
Hi, Steven. Welcome.
Hello. Good to talk to you, gentlemen. Had a couple questions. You can take whatever one you think you might be able to answer. And just to kind of add in with that Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy pick from last week,
yeah,
which featured the infinite improbability drive, I believe.
That's right.
I'm calling you guys through Grand Central and getting call waiting beeps every couple of minutes.
So. All right, that's fine. I didn't know Grand Central had call waiting beeps.
Well, they connect to your home phone, gets call waiting beeps. It's
I see.
Amazing.
Hey, how do you like Grand Central? I just got an invite to that, and I want to try it.
I don't think I fully understand it. I think it could actually be the greatest thing in the world from a telephone standpoint, assuming you trust that they are in it for good and they're not going to be evil entities that are recording and transcribing right. all of your phone calls,
well,
etc.
Well, now that Google owns it, we know they'll be in it for good. Whether they'll be evil is another matter entirely. I trust. I don't know why, but I do trust Google. I'm not too worried about that. Do you know about Grand Central, Paul?
No.
It is. How would you describe it? It's essentially a switchboard application. It has Follow Me, so you'll enter in all your phone numbers. You get a new number. It's absolutely free. You get a new number, and people dial that one number, and it can ring all the phones simultaneously or do all of them one by one. It does voicemail via email, and you're using it as a SIP client too, right? Is that right?
No, I just went to Grand Central and told them I wanted to call you guys, so it called my home number and then connected into Talk Show.
So it is SIP. It is voice over internet, but you're doing it through your regular phone, and they call you, so you're paying nothing.
Correct.
Amazing.
Of my 3 minutes run out in the middle of the call just goes away. But it's still in beta. The way I would describe Grand Central is it's as close as anyone has ever come to everything you could ever want on the telephone front. Because like you said, it's not only is it one number coming in, but if you either use Grand Central for your outgoing calls or you use the one number coming in, you can then, with one button, switch between your phones. So, hypothetically, I could push a button that you're not supposed to hear, and then switch to my cell phone, go out to my car, drive over to my office, push one button, same thing, transfers a call to the office.
Wow.
Pick it up.
Wow, that's interesting.
It is great. Or it scares my brother's family, but I wish it didn't, because I could call one number, ring all their personal cell phones, their home number. They Grand Central screens the calls for them, so they know who's calling. If they don't want to talk to me for whatever reason, they don't have to take the call. It'll continue to ring on all the other phones. If one of them answers on their phone, I talk to them for a few minutes and like, oh, you should talk to the other person.
Paul, I'll send you an invite so you can try it out yourself. I just got an invite myself. I want to check it out. Hey, can we? What's your question?
Okay, question. After all that email talk, I still want to use Outlook 2007, but it doesn't want me, though. I bought a whole new computer in February just for Vista and Office 2007, and yet I still had to get the generic Vista upgrade that I had to apply to it. I went to use Outlook 2007 with my old PST file. It worked for a while, then it stopped working. I got frustrated, said things I'm sure you wouldn't want to include in the podcast, and said, okay, I'm going back to my older machine. I then discovered that it lost my last 4 weeks of outgoing messages.
Hey, let me ask you this. Your file isn't bigger than 2 gigabytes, is it?
I'm sorry, my phone isn't what?
Your Outlook.pst file is not larger than 2 gigs, is it?
Oh, boy.
take a look at that. I'll tell you why. The newer Outlook 2007, and even Outlook 2003 can handle those larger files, but the earlier versions of Outlook could not. And your hardware might not be able to, too, right? Paul?
Oh, I was just impressed that anyone would have a PST file bigger than
2 gigs. Oh, I did. It's because, you know, everything's in there. I don't throw out email, so everything.
I'm going to have to work off memory because I don't actually, you know, it's been a month or two now since I've been using Outlook, but I can say this. I used to archive my PST files every quarter, and just to kind of clear them out, and I get a lot of email. So I want, you know, Outlook's performance is tied directly to the size of that file, et cetera.
Right.
So, you know, it's one of those things you want to kind of take care of. But when I would bring a PST file into Outlook, so if I did a clean install of Outlook 2007, it generates an Outlook.PST file in that hidden directory somewhere into your profile. You can move that, obviously. It's not strictly necessary, but what I usually do is I'll copy the old PST file to the new computer and put it in Documents or somewhere, and I will, from within Outlook 2007, you know, file, open Outlook personal data file, and then it will give you a second entry in that folder list, you know, that has all those subfolders that are in your other PST file.
Right.
If you drag and drop between the two, you'll actually move the file, so you want to be careful about that. So if you want to, you know, go into your old inbox and select all the files, you could right-click copy, right-click paste on your new inbox, because if you drag them over, you'll actually move them. But what I would do is always bring things in, you know, one at a time, and then close the old one. So because you want the main PST file that Outlook 2007 is using to be its own one and to be really the only one. You don't want the thing having multiple PST files open at one time. Because actually, you know, one thing that happens with Outlook too is if you end up moving one of those files off of your hard drive, you'll get this error message every time Outlook starts, and it's kind of a mess. But I found that it's best in Outlook, especially if you have local folders for things, to actually, you know, copy just your calendar out separately, copy just your contacts out separately, and then use that PST file for all your email. And then when you go to the new system, you sort of import that stuff back in, but now you've made a copy of it, and then you close down the old version and keep that wherever you keep it, you know, on a DVD, a different hard drive, a different computer, whatever. And that way that, you know, once you've copied everything over and not moved it, it's not your only version of it. You know, so that way if something goes wrong, at least you do have the version you had before to fall back on.
I mean, this is really the flaw of having that giant Outlook.pst file. Like, it's so big.
Well, as we were sort of alluding to, because every time I'd go on a trip, you know, I'd move all my Outlook stuff over to the laptop I was going to take, or, you know, every time I, you know, bought a new computer or whatever. I mean, I have computers coming through all the time for evaluation purposes or for other reasons. And I've spent a lot of time moving data in and out of Outlook, and you know, I did the sort of thing everyone does. I'll always access it over the network, and that's a disaster. And, you know, the very notion of, like, having one PSD file that you're going to access from multiple locations, even at different times, is completely flawed and so forth. So
all of this backs up your original contention that it's better to do online email. It really is.
You know? Well, I think we're heading there. I mean, I know that people are going to hear this about Thunderbird or Outlook or whatever and say, well, wait a minute, I do this and I do this. And, you know, right. People are very used to the way they're, like I was, you know, up to 2 months ago. I used Outlook for a decade, you know, I bet. And you get used to it, you know. And it's hard to break that chain, I guess. But, yeah, this is the type of thing, you know, if the email happened to have been up on Gmail and the calendar stuff happened to have been up on Google Calendar, getting a new computer wouldn't be traumatic in the slightest.
Right.
Plus, you wouldn't have had to spend the money on the new version of
2007.
Yeah. I mean, but listen, Outlook 2007 is fantastic. It really is. I don't mean to suggest otherwise. You kind of have to work within the confines of the way that Outlook does things.
Avila Fain, welcome. Leo Laporte, Paul Thurrott, you're on. I almost said Net at
Hello.
Night. You've been on so many times on Net at Night. Welcome to Windows Weekly.
How are you? How are you? Andy from Phoenix. How are you today?
Hey, Andy. Good to talk to you again. How are you?
Fine.
Are you on TalkShoe 24/7, just out of curiosity?
No, I was on TalkShoe last week with the Net at Night. That was awesome, by the way.
You're always awesome. On. I know. And it was good to have you, and it's always good to have you. I'm just wondering. I mean, or you make a point of calling in when you know we're going to be on.
Yeah, that's right.
All right.
That's right.
I'll forgive you in that case. What can we do for you?
Well, a couple of things. Congratulations on Lab with Leo getting it through next year. That's awesome.
You're hearing it here first. I just renegotiated the contract, and it expires at the end of August of every year, and we renewed for another year. Yeah, I'm very excited about that.
Congratulations.
Working on, thank you, Paul. Working hard, as everybody, you know, the first thing everybody says is, okay, when's it going to be in the States? And we're working hard on that, and I have a feeling we'll get there soon, but no word
I've
yet.
Seen it.
No word
I've
yet.
Seen the show.
I don't know. Have no idea how you would possibly do that, but anyway.
What
can we do for you?
Oh, NVIDIA drivers came out today, and you said you wanted software. New NVIDIA drivers came out today, just to let everybody know.
Oh, that's
know.
Good. New NVIDIA drivers. Hey. You know, I just saw a story that... interestingly enough, that Dell is urging AT to do better Linux drivers. Well, I tell you, just as soon as you get a big manufacturer like Dell supporting Linux, everything changes. I mean, that's really, really good news. Jared's on the line from, Fruitport, Michigan. Hello, Jared.
Hey.
Fruitport?
How you guys doing?
Is that really the name of the town?
Yes, it is.
Well, they must get a lot of ribbon there.
They should have a
festival.
We have a little carnival and everything. It's quite a bit of fun.
There you go. See? Michigan at this time of year is gorgeous.
Well, it's gloomy out right now.
Oh, I'm sorry. Inside, so. What can we do for you today?
Well, my question, basically, what video conversion software do you use? I've got like AVI, DivX, XVid, and some H.264 video. And I just moved to Vista in my new quad-core system, which I love the speed. And... I just like some good video conversion software.
Are you talking about taking a DVD and moving it to your hard drive? That kind of conversion?
No, I use Magic DVD.
So what is your goal? What are you taking and what are you putting it?
Yeah, what's the goal? Well, I mean, do you have a bunch of videos in different formats?
Yeah, and I'd like to convert them over to WMV with just the software that really does a good job.
Well, actually, I was going to... So rather than convert it, why don't you just install codecs that will let you play those videos in whatever application you want to play them in? So, for example...
I have a little portable media center.
Yep.
And it only accepts WMV.
He wants to play it in his media center.
I see.
So you've got to take all these weird formats and get them to the standard WMV that media center will play.
Interesting.
I don't know what I would recommend.
Yeah, I don't either, actually. Here's something to try. I download something called the Combined Community Codec Pack. They release versions, you know, every so often, so there's probably a newer version out than the one that I have installed. But what that does is it lets you play a bunch of different crazy video formats through things like Windows Media Player, Media Center, and so forth. They won't actually go down to non-compatible devices, which I've run into on the Archos device that I use. And they won't also go out to your Xbox if you have one on a as a Media Center extender. But they may allow you to import those weird video types into Windows Movie Maker. And if that's the case, you can then save to WMV from that application. So that would be the first thing I would try. And in fact, if you can wait a minute, I will even give it a try.
Because okay, I haven't installed. We're going to take a break now while Paul encodes some video. We'll be back about 5 o'clock in the...
No, I'm not going to actually encode video, but I will... but I can see if it will import it, right? Because I know where these videos are that are in a non-standard format. So, yeah, let's see. Let's pull it in there. Yeah, that actually worked fine. Well,
the key is having those codecs so you then can import it.
Yeah, so I imported a non-standard AVI type. It just happens to be something that works really well on the Archos device that I use. I'm not saying this will work for every video type, but it's certainly something to try. I mean, the codecs are free. Movie Maker, of course, comes with Windows. And it actually does a decent job of this kind of thing. I mean, video encoding is a lengthy process, as I'm sure you know. But if you just, I'm just stepping through the whiz here to see what the options are. This will be different on Vista, different versions of Vista, actually, and also on XP. But, you know, it gives me a variety of Windows media formats that I can choose from. So I have sort of a medium quality. It's kind of like a DivX AVI type file. And it's allowing me, it will allow me to do this. I'm not going to sit here and do it now, obviously, but it will allow me to convert it to WMV.
So tell me what we need again. We need the Windows Family Codec Pack. Is that what you call it?
No, it's called the Combined Community Codec Pack.
CCC, Combined Community Codec Pack. Or CCCP, now, for those of you who like the old Soviet Union.
Right. And actually, the icon for it is very Soviet looking.
Oh, that's cool.
But and again, this may not work for every single type. I mean, if you have a lot of DivX files, for example, you may want to look into the software that DivX provides. You know, they may offer that kind of compatibility. But
it's cccp-project.net.
Yeah,
that's a great idea. I mean, that solves a huge part of the problems here.
Yeah, it will at least let you play the files, right?
So it's a direct show filter pack, basically.
Yeah. Okay. The nice thing about it is, at least for the type of file I'm using, and again, I don't know that this will work for every file type that you have, but at least try, after you install this stuff, you know, play them in Media Player to see that they work, and then try importing them into Movie Maker. And if that's the case, but it doesn't do a batch mode type thing, like point it at a folder and go nuts. But at least it will allow you to go through them one by one and actually get it done.
And would it work in Media Center? I mean, Media Center just uses WMP, right?
The files do work in Media Center, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. There you go. How about that, huh?
That's cool.
I don't know if that helps.
I thank you for the call. I appreciate it, Jared. All right. Let's move on to Vary from Long Beach, California. Hi, Vary. Welcome to Windows Weekly.
Hey, alphabetically. Hello, Leo and Paul.
It's good to talk to you.
Hello.
I'm calling from Skype, and I was reading your profile, so recording security now.
Oh, I better change that, huh?
Anyway,
that was yesterday. This is now.
Leo, your life is digital now. You have to keep up.
I have so many status bars and statements everywhere. I can't remember which ones I have to change.
Anyway, just to quote Leo, I think I have to agree with Leo. Paul, come on, neener.
What am I neener neenered for?
I think it was back when we were complaining about our Apple's. 270,000 iPhones sold.
Okay, well, I wish them nothing but success. I have one and I like it. So,
how are you still using it?
Yeah, I have to, Leo.
You got two years.
I paid $600 for the damn thing.
Gotta use it. Yeah. Now, I went back to the Nokia N95 for one day, and as many of the better features. I mean, it has so many more features than the iPhone. I couldn't go back. I said, all right, I give up. I'm an iPhone guy now. I wish it were a little smaller, a little lighter. I wish it did some other things like if I miss the movies, I miss the video recording, the voice recording, the 5-megapixel camera. But ultimately, the iPhone really, does some things. The things it does so well. Anyway,
well,
so that,
now that
was
that
your
many commercials out of the way.
That was your comment. Was neener neener, huh?
Not really. I was just thinking.
just an aside.
You're providing me, of course, with the name of this particular podcast, however. Which
is Neener Neener Live.
Neener Neener Live. Thank you very much.
Anyway, I want to talk about this recent comment from the Acer president CEO or something about Windows Vista.
Right.
Like, I've been getting a lot of requests from my clients and my friends and everything, and a lot of them I want to get back to XP, man. And sometimes, when you buy computers from the stores and everything, it's hard to get back to XP because they don't really provide the drivers.
Sure.
So what did the president of Acer say? I didn't hear that.
Well,
go ahead, Paul.
He's just saying that the industry is disappointed with Vista. It hasn't really rejuvenated sales.
Interesting.
Microsoft was promising, et cetera.
But it has, though. I mean, didn't we see improved sales?
Well, I don't know that we can tie those directly to Vista. I don't know. You know, I think because Microsoft set the expectations so high this time that people were hoping for something like Windows 95. And, as we've discussed here in the podcast, they're going to sell a couple hundred million copies of this OS every year going forward, no matter what. You know, it's just the way it is. That something like that can be seen as anything but a success is just a reality of the PC market, I guess. But, certainly the guy from Acer is the only high-profile PC maker speaking out against their closest partner, which is why you don't see more of that kind of stuff. But, what are they supposed to do? I mean, it took them 5 years to develop the thing. Here it is. And they don't want to talk about anything that's coming down the pike because they don't want to screw up whatever sales they do get from Vista. And, I think it's a real... I think it's certainly a concern. I mean, I'm surprised to hear you say that there are people running Vista that want to go back to XP, although certainly I could picture people having to go back because of compatibility issues here or there, especially with corporate applications.
Yeah, the hardest part is drivers could go back to XP.
Yeah, right. And yet, that's the thing, we talked about in the podcast a few weeks ago where, they've done a better job this time with drivers than ever in the past, but... when it's that one thing that you need to get your job done, it doesn't matter what the percentages are if you can't get if you can't get it working. Yeah, I don't know. It's too bad. I mean, it's I can just say from personal experience, I can't go back to XP. I really find it difficult to use. And I saw a blog about this the other day where someone said, "Well, I don't feel like I'm any more productive in Vista than I am in XP." And I find that to be completely the reverse,
What is it that makes you more productive? What are the...
Well, the number one thing I would point out is just start menu search, although I will say my software pick of the week will actually obviate this need somewhat. But I love Vista that I can hit the start button, type the first couple of letters of something I want, including some things that are sort of obscure and would be normally hidden in the UI, like device manager, device manager you can get to with a couple of clicks if you know what you're doing, but it's very easy to type in DEV and it's the first thing on the list. You hit enter and you're good to go. When I go back to XP, I miss that. So that's one thing.
All right. It's kind of like the conversation we just had about the iPhone and the Nokia N95. Sometimes you just have to put up with a few things because the overall is a positive.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And you haven't found any negatives in Vista, have you?
Any negatives compared to XP, you mean?
Yeah. I mean, obviously some people have, or they wouldn't want to keep using XP.
Yeah, I could actually... No, there are a few things. I don't think... None of them are major, but I would say that the photo importing functionality in Vista is horribly broken compared to the way it works in XP.
Yeah.
In XP, one of the really nice things you could do from this wizard was select a group of photos and just put those in a folder. Because maybe those photos are from a specific event, like a birthday party, but the next five are from a weekend thing that you did, and the next five after that are from some other event, and you want them in different folders with different names. In Vista, this is impossible. And I have no idea what they were thinking when they did that. That's ridiculous. So that's one. And again, I guess that doesn't affect everybody. You could use Picasa or whatever, and that would work correctly, but... I like the way that Windows and Vista does this, XP does this. I like the way that these operating systems name photos when you import them. And they do a nice job with that kind of stuff with the metadata and so forth. But in Vista, they didn't give you the ability to choose only the photos you want to import. You have to import all of them. And I just don't understand that.
We're almost out of time. I'm going to see if we can get through a couple more. And then our software picks of the week, Vertigo 1, is Brian from Columbia, Maryland. Hello, Brian.
Hi there, Leo. I've been with you since the ZDTV days, and love your shows and your podcasts. And Paul, really respect your opinions. May I make a shameless plug?
Please do.
I also have a podcast. It's Social Events and Technology. It's VIRB.com/SET.
Say it again. I didn't get it written down.
It's verb.com, V-I-R-B.
I like Verb. That's, of course, the kind of new MySpace. And then what
I actually got the recommendation from you guys and really love it.
And your site is, say the...
SET, S-E-T, slash SET.
Slash SET. All right. And this is your personal SET? I'm a site.
Yeah, actually, that's the Social Events and Technology. It's a podcast. It's a portal for the podcast that we have.
Excellent, and it's all video. It looks like.
We put video picks of the week there.
I see. What a great idea! So you're doing a podcast, but you're also doing a Verb site to kind of support the cast.
Exactly. Yeah.
Great. All right. There's your plug.
I got a big question for Paul. I built a computer for my father, and he really likes to record. I got him a Vista 64-bit premium, and works great, records everything, and the only problem is he likes to record things and then take out the commercials.
The only
problem is whenever he tries to do it with Nero, he can edit and everything, but when he burns it, it takes out the audio. The audio is not is not there.
So he actually edits the files with Nero.
Yeah,
there's your mistake right there.
So, well, I don't know about that, but I
was wondering if you had any other options.
Nero was one of the. I was using the Nero suite previous to Vista, and when Vista came out, Nero was one of the ones that kind of lagged behind. So I actually, it's sort of on my "you're dead to me" list right now. So I have not looked at Nero recently. I'm laughing because I was talking to my wife last night about this, and there's a certain Elton John song that's now on the "You're Dead to Me" list. But anyway, the point of this is
this list is very long, by the way.
It's very long. Yeah, it's a sort of a private joke. So on the recorded TV show thing, I'm going to recommend Windows Movie Maker again. It works fine with the absolutely, and you
hey,
can
it's
go
free.
In there
you already have it. Why
it's,
not?
It's right? In there. It you can take out the commercials, save it as a WMV file, or just import it directly into DVD Maker and make a DVD out of it.
Is Windows Movie Maker better in Vista than it was in XP?
Yeah, it is. And actually, it also supports HD format, so you can output to various in premium and above. So you should be able to do that in your version. WMV HD if you need to.
Yeah, because it used to be so buggy and slow. All right, that's good to know. All right.
Yeah, it works great for that purpose.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks for the call. Jason from Dayton, Tennessee. Hello, Jason. Welcome to Windows Wiki.
Hey, how you doing?
Getting a lot of echo back from you.
Sorry, I'm using my built-in microphone on my MacBook. That's all I've got right now.
That's okay. Just talk to us while you ask your question.
All right. Hey, guys, thanks for the show. I really appreciate you guys doing a podcast on Windows because there's a lot of ones about Mac and about news and stuff. But one for Windows is great because I'm a network administrator at a college in Tennessee, here in Dayton, Tennessee, and so I like to hear different things that are coming out that we might be able to use, like the Windows Home Server and technologies coming out, stuff like that. But my question is, I'm running Windows Vista on my desktop at work, but I need to administer the servers, and the administration tools that are available are very difficult to install, but they just don't work right. I didn't know if Paul, if you knew if Microsoft's planning on coming out with some tools that actually work correctly on Windows Vista.
You know, I wish I had a good answer for this one. This one has come up recently because, and I don't have a complete answer, unfortunately. The last I heard was they were not planning on shipping Vista-compatible tools, but I didn't understand why. And it had something to do with the release of Windows 2008, so I'm not sure if anyone who's listening to this right now actually has the answer to that, but I had come across something like this because obviously since Vista has been coming out, you know, the question is where is the admin tool pack? For Vista, and I don't know. The last I heard, what I had read was that they weren't planning on doing a Vista specific tool pack, but that they were doing it some different way, and I just don't recall the...
So your impression is that their solution to that is to upgrade to Windows 2008, Server 2008?
No. I mean, obviously, they're going to have to do something so that you can administer Windows servers from within Vista, and I don't remember what...
Oh, I see. It's going that way. I misunderstood. It's not administering Windows Vista desktop clients.
This has been an issue for a long, long time, right? So the current version of the admin pack, which is for Windows Server 2003, doesn't work properly
on Vista.
On Vista. That's been true obviously forever. So I don't know. I'll tell you what. I'm going to look into this, and by next, I realize the next. Well, I don't know how I'm going to do this. I'll have to figure out some way to get back to you.
We'll talk about it next week.
But if you want to send me an email, and I'm going to look into this because I can ask Microsoft and figure out what the real story is here, because I just came across this, and what I got in my head was it's not going to work and they're not going to make it work, but I don't have the full answer, so I apologize for that.
So do you want to give out your email address, or should I just send people to the super site for Windows? That's probably the best way, huh?
That's fine. I mean, it's my last name. You can see it there in the list at gmail.com.
Okay, that's easy.
So,
and Paul's site is, of course, the super site for Windows, winsupersite.com. We're going to thank you for all your calls. We've run out of time, but I do want to leave some time for Paul's software pick of the week.
Okay. Now, okay. Did we talk about Launchy last week?
Yes, we did.
Because it's not Launchy. So... but it's like Launchy.
Launchy was my pick. I love Launchy because it gives me keystroke access to all my applications.
Okay. Well, I know we hit on a little bit Jeff. Oh gosh, I just read his name. Jeff Raskin's son.
Yes.
Is out. He's got a company called Humanized.
Right.
And they're releasing software, and they have something called the Enso Launcher. And also something called Enso Words. I guess I would go with Launcher as the actual pick.
How do you spell Enso?
Well, actually, the web, it's ENSO, but the website is humanized.com. And what this is, I believe it's like Quicksilver on the Mac, although I don't actually use that product. But you basically hit Alt Space, and it brings up a...
Same idea.
Yeah, a Launchy type thing, and you can type things in. And it's really intelligent. You can program it and... all that kind of stuff. So obviously you could type F and Firefox is the first thing that pops up, but you also get a drop-down list, like Flock. For some reason, the defragger's in there, Safari, I guess F is in those names. So it's just a nifty little, and again, for people like me who like to keep their hands on the keyboard so they can keep going, you want to get something rather than doing the other ways you could do that through the start menu and so forth. It's just a quick little, key tap, and it brings up that little launcher window in the middle, and you can type into it and so forth.
Looks like Humanize has a lot of stuff. I'm going to have to take a look at what they're up to.
Yeah, it's neat. And actually, I haven't been able to download their reader. They have an RSS reader. And I've been, there's something wrong with the server. I think the address is wrong on the server or something. But they have various little applications. Now, the caveat here is that this thing isn't actually free, but the trial is free. And if you buy more than one of their applications, they get cheaper, over time and so forth. So.
Well, you can try Launchy, which is free, and see if you like that. Mm-hmm. Don't try them both at the same time, or you'll
right. They'll fight each other.
You'll have a weird experience. But and then try the Enso launcher. I'm going to try it for sure. I mean, I'll tell you, I can't use a Mac without Quicksilver. So if there's something that makes Windows easier, I'll be very thrilled.
And that's what these things are essentially. Is that right? Quicksilver.
Very much okay. So. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what Launchy is, and so I'll try Enso Launcher, absolutely.
Oh, actually, so I'm looking at Launchy, it's an incredibly similar, so anyway, these are really interesting to me, these kinds of things, and I'm really into the whole less is more approach to computing and so forth that Raskin and company are pushing here.
I agree.
I think if you look out, he had a talk at Google where he was saying, I looked at my computer and I found... at least 14 applications that have their own spell checkers.
Isn't that ridiculous? Yeah.
What are we doing?
Let's get one more call in before we go, because poor Trevor's been hanging on the whole time, and I want to get him on the show. Hey, Trevor, where are you calling from today? Wait a minute. Let me turn you up. Go ahead.
Can you hear me all right?
I hear you great. Yeah, where are you calling from?
Oh, great. Okay, I'm calling from Portland, Oregon area.
Thanks for hanging on, Trevor.
Hey, thank you for taking the call. So I'm about ready to sell my Zune. I had a lot of hope for it when it first came out, but I'm about done now, and I'm close to getting an iPod instead. But I just wanted to ask if there are any enticing upgrades, either content or functionality, that are in the pipeline right now.
Last chance for the Zune. Any way to save the Zune, Paul? Anything new coming?
Oh, I'm sorry, I fell asleep.
No, there's some big upgrades. You keep telling us that we're going to see more improvements on Zoom.
That's what they told me. And
nothing.
Here, what is it, July? Yeah, I don't know. So what they've said publicly is that they will release at least one new Zune model, you know, before the end of the year. I think we can sort of look at it and guess it's probably going to be a flash type device. And I have to say, I look at some of the stuff that Microsoft does, like the Windows Live stuff is a great example of this. MSN used to be like this. And with the Zune team, I sort of thought they were going to follow this approach where they would be very quick moving. You know, late last year, they talked very much about how this all came together in January. We shipped the product in, you know, October, and look how fast we did it. And, you know, I have to say, since then, it's been awfully slow moving, hasn't it?
Yeah.
And not very impressive.
Is your sense, though, that Microsoft is committed to Zune?
That's what they say. You know, I mean,
they were just like they were committed to Ultimate TV.
Well, no, I don't believe they ever made that kind of promise. But no, they've used the same language with the Zune that they use with the Xbox. You know, I mean, before the Xbox 360 was even announced, you know, Bill Gates said, "We're in this for the long haul. Yeah. It's going to be another Xbox. There's going to be, you know, that we look at this as a long term play." And God, they throw a lot of money at things like this. And
they can afford it.
They can afford it, but you have to wonder sometimes if this is the best use of resources. I mean,
well, on the other hand, I mean, Apple's the same way with the iPhone. If you're going to create a new platform and a new marketplace, you've got to be in it for, you know, you don't can't expect it to turn right away. You've got to put some money into it and hang on. Right. For a few years, and I think that that's not unreasonable. There is some point beyond at which you're going to have to say, "Well, I guess it's not going to go anywhere," but that's not after 1 year.
That's for sure. And yeah, like you said, I mean, you know, they have enough money. You know, they certainly have enough money.
But to answer his question,
yes,
is there any compelling
reason anything coming?
He should not sell that soon today. No.
Well, I hate to answer questions like that.
Because tomorrow something could come out. You don't know of anything, though.
I don't. And the way I look at it is this. You know, you can look at an iPod and a Zune side by side and say, you know, the Zune has a better screen. It has a couple of other things maybe that are interesting, an FM tuner, et cetera. But, the iPod has this whole ecosystem behind it.
Right.
And I think the thing that's interesting to me about the iPod is I'm not going to sit there and watch a movie on it. The screen's just too small for me personally. But it works in my car. You know, I can download podcasts and they work seamlessly with the device. There's a whole store selling TV shows and movies if that's what I wanted to get, you know. Obviously all the accessories, everything. I mean, there's just a big, you know, thing. It's one of the reasons why the PC is such a no-brainer for people. For so many people is, you know, you don't think about it. It's just, you know, when you go into Best Buy or whatever, that thing you buy is going to work with it. And the iPod is like that, I would say, for that market. It's a no-brainer. I would like to see Microsoft be far more aggressive than they are with the Zune, but, well, where is it? It's been 8 months. You know, it's taking too long.
So all we have to say to that is neener, neener. And we are done. I want to thank everybody who stopped by. We do hope to make this a monthly event. I don't know about you, Paul, but I think it's really great taking the calls. I think it's really fun.
Oh, no, I do like doing it. Yeah.
So we will be back another day to do another Talk Shoe broadcast. We thank everybody for joining us at talkshoe.com. For those of you who are listening live, this show is, of course, a podcast in higher quality. Available Fridays on the Twit Network. So stop by twit.tv/ww for this podcast tomorrow. We also want to remind everybody that this show is brought to you by audible.com for your free audiobook. Visit audible.com/windows. And this week's pick of the week, any Thomas Friedman book, frankly, but The Lexus and the Olive Tree, really a good read, just entertaining, as well as very informative. Thanks, Paul Thurrott. You can catch Paul on his website, the Supersite for Windows, winsupersite.com. His blog is internet-nexus.com. And don't forget his great book, Windows Vista Secrets, available from Wiley & Sons and better bookstores everywhere. We will talk again next week, okay?
Thank you, sir.